Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the only podcast when we freely admit that we are waiting for Doom Patrol to come back. I'm Paul Hicks, and you can find me on Twitter at @reading_Hicks.
And I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at @avantgarve. And you can also find Wilfred, our sentient show account, at @WFDpod. And you can also email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com.
Excellent. How's your week, Mike?
Pretty good. I think I'm more excited about this week in comics coming up because Dynamite Comics are bringing out their new King miniseries, or group of miniseries, I should say, kicking off with a new Flash Gordon book and a new Phantom book. So I'm pretty
keen to get those. Walks.
Yeah, The Ghost Who Walks.
Yeah, excellent.
Yes.
You're a bit of a Phantom fan from way back. You're an Australian, so you ought to be.
Kind of. I think my late father was more of a Phantom fan than I was, so there's a bit of a nostalgia factor in it for me. But I've really, really enjoyed the most recent Flash Gordon series, which also finishes this week, written by Jeff Parker and art by Doc Shaner. And that's just been so much fun. But it's finishing with issue number 8. A little bit sad about that.
Is that a cancellation or is that a planned ending?
I believe it was planned. They've never really come right out and said why. But these things happen, so I'm glad they got the 8 issues. 8 issues and a Christmas special and an annual. So actually kind of 10 issues all up. So it was good. What about yourself? What have you been reading this week?
I'm in Wollongong. I'm in Wollongong for work, which is just as exotic as it sounds. Yes, I'm in a hotel room tonight. So on the road, as it were.
Wow.
And reading-wise, I think I'll talk about something different tonight. I just want to tell you, I'm in love.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it's quite serious. I'm in love with a little thing called the Flash TV show.
Oh, well.
I think it's, without any hyperbole and just being dead straight and honest, it's probably the best show ever made.
Wow, that's a big call.
It's a big call. I'm picking up that phone and I'm dialing that one, so... I'm holding the big handset right now on that call.
I have to ask, do you rate The Flash?
Yeah. I totally rate The Flash.
Totally rate it?
Totally. Yeah. As far as superhero comic shows, I'm a bit fair weather. Like, I never got into Smallville. I watched like 4 eps of that and thought, this is crap. There's lots of things. Like, I still haven't got into Gotham. I have a love-hate relationship with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But The Flash is my jam. It is like, it would be the perfect show if I was 10. It's the perfect show now that I'm not 10. I'm substantially older. It's like the only drama my entire family likes to watch together.
Wow.
Like, they'll all sit down for The Amazing Race and things like that. But, you know, this is a show that they all enjoy. And my wife really had to be dragged kicking and screaming to sit down and watch it. And she's quite into it now, which...
Cool.
So it perfectly captures the tone of pretty much the Wally West stories, the fantastic run by Mark Waid, and just the way they cycle through the villains. I mean, they're using all these great Flash villains, and they've stolen all these great Firestorm villains to use as well. But it's just wonderful. And personally, I get really sick of whiny superheroes who have the weight of the world on their shoulder. I'm so tired of that stuff. So just seeing a superhero who's learning about his powers and pushing the boundaries and sort of having fun, even despite some nasty villains and stuff, it's just fantastic. So highly recommend The Flash. If you're not watching it, what's wrong with you?
Well...
What's wrong with you, Mike?
Well, in all honesty, I just haven't gotten around to it yet. I'll admit, I kind of prefer to wait for things to come out on DVD, just a personal preference. My wife is the same. We have been watching Arrow quite a fair bit, and we just finished watching season two, where, funnily enough, the Flash, before he becomes the Flash, does his guest appearance in a couple of episodes. And there's also the initial shots showing him falling into all the numerous chemicals and such. Spoiler warning for anyone that's never read or watched The Flash.
Put that in the basket of spoilers that he runs fast. He is a fast-running person.
Right, right. Spoiler. That sort of Flash, not the rude kind. Yeah,
or the photography kind.
So we are quite looking forward to seeing The Flash, but we just take our sweet time getting to the good stuff, so to speak. So we'll get there. We'll get there.
I like Arrow, but The Flash is a much more fun show.
That's the thing I'm hearing.
It's a wonderful tone.
And reading that it's a lot of fun and just pure enjoyment more than anything. So.
Yeah. Oh, don't wait, Mike. Get on it. Get on it. You'll deepen our friendship, and that's worth doing. Don't you want to be deeper, friend?
Wow. Holy jeez. That's no pressure now, Mike.
God. Come on, let's take it to the next level, Mike.
Oh, my God. Okay, you're not getting creepy at all.
I'll know where that restraining order comes from.
Oh, my goodness, what's that I hear? I think that's ticking.
Ooh.
Saved by the bell of the doom clock. Okay, so no great surprise to anyone. The numbers on the Doom Clock this week have not changed at all. The final issue of Doom Patrol Volume 5, number 22, shipped back in July of 2011. So it's been 3.5 years since their own series. However, the most recent appearance was back in Justice League number 33 from last October. So it's only been a few months since we've seen them in action. However, back in this week, back in 1988, issue 8 of Volume 2 went on sale for the princely sum of 75 US cents. Wow.
Wow. I bought that one off the racks, Mark.
Wow.
I was there.
You were there. It was in this issue, it showed us a pre-Morrison team led by Celsius, and they were on the hunt for the metallic assassin Shrapnel.
Shrapnel.
Who was basically sentient metal, and he kind of blew himself up and sprayed shrapnel everywhere. That was his thing.
His shtick.
His shtick, yes.
His shtick.
Shrapnel
shtick. Shrapnel shtick. Shtick.
And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Right, time for Doomsplaining. And today on the show, we're looking way, way, way back to the very beginning of the Doom Patrol, which occurred in My Greatest Adventure number 80. And we'll look through to issue 85, which was when the book stopped being My Greatest Adventure. And the next issue, it turned into Doom Patrol.
That's how popular they were. They changed the title of the book they were in. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, Mike, you've read these, I've read them. Where are we going with this?
Well, let's just sort of cover some of the highlights as we go through the issues. The very first one, it's kind of bang, straight off the mark with the secret origins of the team. With, you know, this strange wheelchair-bound scientist calling himself the Chief, sort of revealing their secret origins to each other. And they're all sort of kind of being persuaded to use their strange powers for the good of mankind.
Yeah, there's some interest. He gathers them in the shadows, and one by one they hear their stories. And I'm not usually one for old comics, Mike, I must admit. I'm a bit of a modern man. But looking back at these, this art is really nice.
Like, isn't it just? It's so
it's
cool.
Really well done.
Yeah.
There's no skimping, and it's obvious that the artist understands anatomy, understands, you know, the facial expressions and everything.
Yeah.
It's just terrific.
And it's really clean line work as well, and just, as you said, the expressions and the anatomy are just, they've kind of got an old school charm, but they also just work really well. It's just great art.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, also in this first issue, we also see General Immortus for the first time, one of their longtime enemies, which was great.
Would you say he's their worst villain?
He's up there.
He's up there.
He's up there.
I'm puzzled by General Immortus. He has, like, there's several things going on in this. He can spy on the Doom Patrol in their own base without any explanation of why he can do that.
Mm.
So he can just look through, you know, he's looking basically at them as they're looking at their own massive TV. They have this massive TV in their headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the chief is like some sort of TV engineer. It's like a wall-sized television, but it's not widescreen. It's 4x3, which is just, you know, insane. It's probably black and white, because I'm reading these in black and white, but I can't tell.
Well, it's not, but anyway. Yeah, so I think for an issue that introduced the team, it just fires on all cylinders. It's so great that you're like, bang, straight in the action. Here's the team. Here's a weird, creepy old supposedly immortal villain. Let's give them an adventure.
He's an alien spaceship.
Yeah, as you do.
Yeah, it looks like a dart with rocket fins on it.
Very pulpy, Flash Gordon-y type design on that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's mini little tanks with eyes. There's all sorts of crazy things going on here.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. It is awesome. I love it. I love it. And then we move on to issue 81, where the team and pretty much everyone in the world is being plagued by bizarre nightmares from someone who, which is quite, I guess, timely back in the day, someone who turns out to be an ex-Nazi. And
still a Nazi, I think. You don't think he's giving up the Nazism?
Well, yeah, I guess.
He's just not with the Nazi party now since the war.
There we go. That's what I meant. But he's got a brilliant disguise to get away from everyone.
Well, removing his monocle. But...
Well, that and the facial hair. That's all he needed to confuse everyone.
Yeah. And there's giant monsters in this one. Like, I was thinking, I started reading it and it was like, it's Rita in Pacific Rim. That's what it seemed like.
Yes. Rita fighting a gigantic octopus. Of all things.
Yep.
Yeah, she had some great scenes where she, grew to giant size to fight all these horrific monsters that everyone was seeing. Everyone except for Cliff.
Cliff, can't see him. That's a mystery, isn't it?
We won't spoil it. Leave some of the mystery there.
But I was impressed that the chief had designed a giant oxygen tank and he just had it sitting around just in case they needed to do some giant underwater work with Rita.
Look, that's what I like about the chief. He's always thinking ahead. He thought, just in case Rita needs to scuba dive whilst in her giant form, we're prepared for it.
And Rita is such a badass in this. Like, she pulls out a torpedo from a submarine and lobs it at a giant octopus.
Yeah. And then, when a submarine has broken down, she goes and finds a gigantic oyster shell and carves out a new propeller blade from it and attaches it to the submarine.
She is unstoppable.
She's so cool. And what I love, in her the origin issue, she was like a gold medal swimmer and athlete, as well as a movie star, and she did her own stunts.
Australians always get behind Olympians, don't we?
It's all that gold, green and gold.
Green and gold.
But yeah, I think that's something that was kind of downplayed in later appearances of Rita, the fact that, she was so kick-ass and a stunt woman and an actress and an athlete that...
Yeah, I remember them playing up the sort of movie star angle, but I don't remember all this, all these other accomplishments. Like,
yeah,
Yeah, and that was one thing that I got from reading these early stories is she is just fantastic. Like, I think she's probably my favourite character in the book.
Cool. We then move on to issue number 82, which the cover of it shows poor old Robot Man getting melted down while saving the day once again.
Yeah. That seems to happen. The robotic characters in DC Comics, they always get broken down, smashed, crushed. Like Red Tornado, you cannot do a Red Tornado story without him getting dismantled or blown up or destroyed or crushed or bits of him going everywhere. It's pathetic.
Worst robots ever, DC. This was an interesting tale in that it had people trying to discover Chief's identity and kind of going about nefarious means to make it appear that someone on the team, either Rita or Cliff, the robot man, or Larry, aka Negative Man, were actually betraying the Chief.
Yeah, there's a bit of espionage and that going on, which was interesting. It looks like it's very, you know, and alternate underground movements, but then they turn out to be little green men.
Literally.
They whip off their fake human masks and they're all like 50s Doctor Who people.
Yeah, that's a good description of them. Yeah.
It's not technically accurate. Doctor Who started in the 60s. So I don't want to get in trouble with that.
It's about the same time.
Yeah. It was the olden days.
Back in the old days, everything was black and white. So these aliens are convinced that the Chief is also an alien, and they've decided to try and form an alliance with him to basically overheat the world and then make it look like the aliens are coming to save humanity when actually they're just going to enslave humanity.
But they actually, I mean, I'm surprised a lot of these villains in a lot of these stories are just really sneaky and wily, and they, you know, set things up so the Doom Patrol can beat them, and then they've actually double-crossed or, you know, they're doing something different that the Doom Patrol didn't expect. So there's always a little swerve with the aliens and the bad guys in these books, and it's really impressive.
Yeah. That's what I love. These old things, these old issues are just... they're just such cool, you know. There's no real continuing story in these initial issues, but they're just really great one and done stories, and they're just a lot of fun.
Yeah, and there's so much just keeping, like Arnold Drake keeps the artist drawing amazing things from page to page. Like, you know, 1 minute they have to draw a snow monster, and then there's giant dragons, and then there's spaceships and aliens, and, you know, lava creatures, and it's just full of imagination, and it's so exuberant. Yeah. Like, it looks like a lot of old comics look like people were just doing a job when they made them. These look like people were having a whole ton of fun.
Then in number 83 of My Greatest Adventure, we have the unfortunate incident of a Negative Man kind of going berserk and Larry losing control of him, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
and they have to put Larry in suspended animation so he doesn't die due to the 60-second clause that he came with. If Negative Man is out of his body for more than 60 seconds, he dies.
Yeah.
Unless suspended animation.
Which I don't think they've ever done ever again. Remember?
No.
I think this was the only time they ever tried that trick. So. Yeah. Not only did Negative Man's powers go berserk, I think Rita kind of lost control of her ability to shrink and grow large, and then Cliff was also sort of having troubles controlling his robotic body as well, but it was all a bit...
This one's a bit kooky.
Yeah, this one wasn't quite as enjoyable as the others.
Yeah.
I think it's also one of the shorter stories, and I think because at the time My Greatest Adventure was actually kind of an anthology series, and I do own some of these original issues, so I can't remember which one it was, but one of the backup stories was Jungle Boat Explorers discovering this weird plant that actually devolved him into a caveman, and of course this was after discovering other cavemen in that same area. So,
do these people explore things other than jungle boats or just jungle boats?
I think, well, they were on a boat in the jungle, if you want to get snippy.
They don't explore different types of boats. Airboats.
No, they don't go.
Hovercrafts.
No. No, they're not the boat explorers. That was
good
just
to clarify.
Example.
Yeah,
I just sorry.
Want to be on the same page as we
right.
move through this. Because you've got the original issue, apparently.
Well, some of them I do, yes. Not all. We'll get into that later. Yeah, so that issue, yeah, as you said, it was a bit kooky. But then back in number 84, we have the return of General Immortus.
Would you say he's their worst villain? Sorry. it's good to see him back. He's really is a nasty old bugger.
Well, especially seeing they thought he died in his first appearance. Yeah.
Now, Mike, what's his objective? Can you remember what his objective is? Does it stand out to you? What's he all about?
He's actually trying to track down some stones of Babylon, which is going to give him...
Where we sat down.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Jesus. Which will lead him to an ancient treasure burial mound and give him more secrets into prolonging his life. Unfortunately, he also decides to take control of Robot Man by dipping him in hot lead.
Which apparently... And putting a bomb in his head.
There was that, yes. So
there's
it was
a bomb in the head, there's hot lead, and there's a leash in the back of him. Yeah. And a wire with a trigger. Very thorough.
Yeah, oh, very thorough. So it was kind of down to the rest of the team to save poor old Cliff from this predicament.
Yeah, and the Chief actually has a bit of a freak out because he's back. I actually thought the Chief wasn't as cool in this one. It was like,
well, that's the thing.
Flustered.
We don't quite learn exactly what happens between Immortus and the Chief until a little bit later on down the track. Once the title of the book has changed to the Doom Patrol proper. But yeah, it was cool to see Immortus back and actually sort of almost getting the upper hand for most of the story, as far as a villain goes, I guess.
Yeah.
What I did like about this issue, though, is the way that Negative Man saved the day. In that
Racing electricity along a wire.
Yes. He managed to race the charge from the detonator button to the bomb encased in Robot Man. That was cool.
Yeah. Everyone gets something to do in every adventure. And it's interesting. It's kind of that DC Silver Age fun thing where, you know, the powers are tested and, you know, there's a bit of science in there sometimes.
Mm.
Sometimes it's complete made-up crap, weird science, but it's still in there.
Comic book science. It's still science.
Yeah.
And then in the final issue of the book, as it was called, My Greatest Adventure, they're actually facing the Furies from 4,000 miles below the Earth.
Yeah.
And by Furies, they mean nuclear radioactive...
Lava monsters.
Yeah, lava monsters. I think I like this one because, again, everyone on the team has something to do.
Well, the Chief tries to sideline Rita, actually. He does the whole, oh, it's too dangerous for a woman.
I do think in these really early issues, there was a bit of a love triangle almost. It was between Rita, Larry, and Cliff. And of course, the Chief's protective of the entire team, but... Every now and then, there are a couple of scenes where you almost think Larry and Rita might hook up, and then Cliff comes along in his big dorky Robot Man mode and ruins it for both of them. It's kind of cute, but yeah.
I can see that. Yeah, and there's a bit in this one about Rita trying to have a normal career again as an actress, except she gets hoodwinked by these dodgy Hollywood types they trick her into shrinking so they can film their movie on the TV.
Yeah. It's like, oh, it'd be really handy if we didn't have to keep building gigantic sets to make the actor look small. And, oh, he's broken his ankle. And, oh, Rita, do you think we could? And she obliges. And then it was all a trick.
Never trust Hollywood types.
Never. Also with Rita, I think sometimes it was very, how do I put this? She was treated very much like
a doormat.
A doormat in some scenes as well. In issue 84, after the team rescues Cliff, and this is the issue where he'd been encased in lead by General Immortus. At the end of it, there's a scene where the team are all standing around, and you know, they're sort of slapping each other on the back, saying, you know, we did really well, but of course it's Rita that's cleaning up the lead off Robot Man, and he's saying to her, hey, good, you know, take it easy with that steel wool, Rita. That's no coffee pot you're screwing, as she's cleaning up his arm, and you know, he's ha ha ha. And in this day and age, that's made me cringe a little bit.
Yeah. In issue 85, though, when Rita, you know, is tricked into being in this film, but she ends up saving the day, and it actually, I thought, the fact that the chief tried to sideline her and she got involved anyway and sorted it all out, it actually showed that I think the writer has a bit more respect for Rita than the than the team do.
Yeah. So it was really interesting to sort of note that kind of old-fashioned treatment of a female character, which in this day and age probably wouldn't, well, it wouldn't fly.
Yeah, but there's nothing ditzy about Rita.
No.
Like, she's confident and she's a woman of action and she's always in there. It's great.
Which is why I think I get so upset at the fact that she ended up marrying Mento later on down the track.
Mento!
We all know how Mike feels about Mento. So, Paul, overall, what did you think of these first six issues of the Doom Patrol?
Well, this is a book. I mean, I've got here the Showcase Presents the Doom Patrol, which reprints a whole bunch of them in black and white. And when this came out, I was a Doom Patrol fan. I was like, it's old, it's black and white. I'm not sure if that's going to be worth my time or my effort. And when we started doing this podcast, you immediately went, aha, I know what to buy you because you don't have it. And you rushed out and bought me this on eBay.
Yes.
So when it came, I was like, ooh, these are old comics. I don't know how I'll go, because a lot of old comics, like, yeah, they're like nice to visit, but they're not fun to stay in. Mm-hmm. You know, a bit like going to my parents for the weekend. So seeing them, when actually reading them, I've really enjoyed them. I mean, I think they hold up. They're not boring. There's nothing boring about them. The characterization, it's a little bit, you know, not very complex. I mean, no one's really thinking about themselves too much or their motivations or anything. But it gets on with it, and it's just, it is quite fun. And, you know, the art really sells it all.
Yeah.
It's so nicely done. It's consistent. The artist, Bruno, and I cannot say his last name properly.
Let's say Premiani. Yeah.
Premiani, we'll say that from now on. Mm-hmm. He's a really good artist. He does great machinery. He does great environments. He does great big TVs in centres. It's all good stuff.
As you said before, the range of stuff that Bruno had to draw, you know, from giant sea monsters to, you know, alien rocket ships to, you know, like a ballroom full of people, you know, that are having a stately dinner for the patrol to... you know, giant lava monsters. The amount of creativity that's there, it's just so cool, you know?
Yeah. There isn't, I mean, if you wanted to be really obnoxious, there isn't a lot you can make fun of in this stuff.
Mm.
Like, it's well done, it's sincere, and it's fun.
That's the thing. It's fun. It's just a fun, adventure-filled read from start to finish. Yeah.
I'm really grateful you sent this to me, and I'm really grateful we're talking about it.
Yeah, look, when I found out that you didn't have it, I had to get it to you. I was this shall not stand.
I'll send you a list of all the other books I haven't got, so we can talk about them as well in the future.
Right, we'll talk about that later. So, issues 80 to 85 of My Greatest Adventure, do you rate them?
I totally rate them. I really do rate them. And I think I would reread these. That is the mark of reading Hicks respect, if I would reread something.
Mm.
So I've always tried to buy my comics on the basis that they will get read more than once.
Yeah.
And I don't like having things that I just want to read once and dispose of. That's what the library's for. But this is a really good book. I've been really impressed. And thank you, Mike.
No, my absolute pleasure. As you said, it's... one of those things that, if you like fun adventure with, you know, interesting characters, this edition, the Showcase Presents edition, with the reprints, I love every now and then just grabbing it off the bookshelf and just flipping to a random story. And they're just, you know, it's rare to be disappointed in one of these old stories. They're just so much fun. And yeah, I love them. Which probably surprised no one, but you know.
Mike likes the Doom Patrol. What?
What the?
What? Yeah, so I'm looking forward to traveling further into this book in the next little while. So, I mean, part of the thing we wanted to do on the show is jump around. We didn't want to stay in the one spot. We wanted to be like the House of Pain and jump up and jump around. And part of that is, so, I mean, we get to read different things at different times and we get to look at different characters. We didn't want it to be, you know, starting at the start and reading your way through and then everyone's going, when are you going to get to Grant Morrison's run? So,
in that exact voice.
That's how they talk, the Grant Morrison fans.
Wow. I think we just lost half our listeners then.
All right, Mike. Shall we go to the mailbag of doom at this point?
Let's do that.
Okay. This week on Mailbag of Doom, our question to all our followers on Twitter and Facebook was, what's the oldest comic you own? Because we're looking at some pretty old comics here. So Shmoby1 said his oldest is Flash 66 from August 1945. And that's the only Golden Age issue he has. And he was given that one. But he also added that the earliest one he actively chased is Flash 105 from February 1959. Now, I don't know if you know, that is the first issue of Barry Allen Flash when the book changed from Showcase to The Flash.
Oh, okay.
So that is a bloody pricey comic that Shmoby One owns. So, huge Flash fan.
Cool. We also heard from Keith Colbeck, who is at Cub Reporter K on Twitter. He said Power Pack number 1 from 1984, and that he's not a looking back kind of guy. But respect, I love Power Pack back in the day. They were good fun.
Yeah. And we heard from Sam Marks, and he said probably Fantastic Four 156 from March 1975. That's quite an old one.
That was a good year. Friend of the show, Ange, Dr. Ange, as we found out last week.
Dr. Ange.
He, and we know Dr. Ange is
He's a doctor.
He said the oldest comic he had is Action Comics number 253.
Yeah, that's right in the middle of an area I don't know, so I'm not sure how old that is, but that sounds old. Yeah, awesome. Josh Sapien. Hello, Josh Sapien. He said the oldest comic, some mid-70s Marvel Cosmic book, I think, so that's probably something Jim Starlin, I guess.
That would sound about right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tim McEwen, who is at TimMcEwen67 on Twitter, he said the oldest comic he bought, new off the stands, is probably a 1975 Newton Comics black and white reprint of the Avengers number 6, which he coloured in himself.
Oh, high five. Do you remember Newton Comics?
Vaguely, yes. I think, because I grew up in Papua New Guinea, and so a lot of our entertainment had to come from Australia. And I do recall seeing kind of current comic books coming into town, but they were in black and white. So I think that was the sort of thing they had there.
Yeah, I've got a few at home still, but they're like black and white comics printed on sandpaper with the colour cover. Yeah. And they're a bit bigger than regular comics, your regular American comics. But they're a bit funky. I show them to my son and he looks at me like I'm trying to make him eat rocks.
Tim also said that the oldest outright is probably Strange Tales number 161, featuring Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Doctor Strange.
Wow. That's cool. Coming soon to a cinema near you.
Yes.
Ken Henningsen. He said oldest comic is World's Fair 1940.
Wow.
With Superman, Batman, and Robin in a comic together for the first time. Cool. And that is probably worth a pretty penny, I'm guessing.
Probably. Probably.
Hey, Ken, can I borrow it? I haven't read it.
So, Paul, what's the oldest comic that you own?
Oh, now this is interesting because the oldest comic I own is coincidentally a Doom Patrol issue. And it's Doom Patrol 89, which is the first appearance of Animal Vegetable Mineral Man.
Wow.
And you know how I got this?
No.
You don't?
No, I don't.
Oh, I better tell you. I got it by buying the Flex Mentallo miniseries on eBay. And it came in the mail, and there were two extra issues with it. And one was this issue of the Doom Patrol, and the other was a showcase Doom Patrol issue when the team was brought back by Paul Cooperberg in the 70s.
Nice.
So these just happened to come with the Flex Mentallo miniseries, which was good because at the time that was the most expensive four issues of comic books that I'd ever bought.
Wow.
Because I didn't buy it when it came out because I was an idiot.
It happens. It happens to the best of us.
It does. What about you, Mike?
This will probably surprise no one at all, but the oldest comic that I own is My Greatest Adventure number 80 from June of 1963.
Shut the front door!
And I'll open it up again and show you that very comic.
Oh. So which one's that?
This is the very first appearance of the Doom Patrol in My Greatest Adventure. So it's like the first thing we read in the Showcase Presents Omnibus with them, you know, their introduction and them facing off against General Immortus for the first time. This was the one I had to have at the height of my Doom Patrol mania.
So what did you pay for that, Mike?
I paid a bit. I'll say three figures. So,
three figures,
but they were kind of lowish figures. So, I was happy to part with the amount that I paid because it wasn't ridiculous, but I felt it was worthy. So,
I've been looking around, and they seem to go anywhere between about $700 and $350.
I did better than that. So. Oh,
good, I'm worried about you, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Worried about your financial well-being.
Thank you. I'm sure a few other people are too. But I only got this in the last year or so, when I was, you know, tracking everything down madly. So I only own four issues of the six before it changed to the Doom Patrol in the 60s, but the hunt goes ever on. I will eventually get the single issues, and my obsessive compulsive self can then rest, you know?
Oh, that will be a good day. Buy two if you ever see them. Just buy two of everything.
Okay, two. Why?
You've got a good mate.
Oh, this is the taking the friendship to the next level thing, is it?
We can go there together.
Right. dearie me. On that note.
Yeah.
I think we'll wrap things up.
Do we want to plug a pod?
You may plug a pod first.
Okay. I'd like to plug the Thwipping Boys podcast.
Ah, yes.
Thwipping Boys. They're a couple of British lads, and they don't talk like the crazy British people we see on TV. They actually are very articulate and nice. And I love their shows. They do lots of television show reviews and things like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and The Walking Dead. They talk about old animated movies and things like that. They're really entertaining, and they have some really good insights into stuff. So they're just a pleasant thing to listen to. And I've been a fan of them since the way back that they used to review all the New 52 books when they were starting. So the show's evolved a bit over the year, but they're on YouTube too. So if you like to see people as well as listen to them, that could be the show for you. So Thwipping Boys. And they've got great audio interstitials and things. Thwipping Boys and things like that with echoes. And
right.
Really well done.
Is that a hint?
You live your own life, Mike.
Okay. I would like to give a shout out to our friends Aaron Myers and Andrea Shockling, who do the Comics Therapy podcast. You can find them at Comics Therapy on Twitter. And they don't review any books, but they do a lot of analysis and a lot of talking about a specific theme each episode. And more often than not, they will have a creator on as a guest, and they get some really interesting conversations going on that show. So I love their show. They're great people. And check them out. Comics Therapy.
They're a, They're the David and Margaret of comics reviewing, though.
You're going to have to explain David and Margaret to half our audience now.
David and Margaret review movies on SBS, or they used to until recently.
They used to.
And, yes, and they're not always on the same page, but it's always entertaining.
Yes, okay. I'm sure we'll get lots more questions about that now. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. You can find us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page, and I'm on Twitter at avantgarve. Paul is on there at reading_Hicks. Any parting thoughts for us this week, Paul?
I'd like an iTunes review or two, I reckon. I want to know what people think. If you think we're really good, tell us. If you think we're crap, tell us.
Yeah.
The door is open.
Yes.
If we can improve anything, I'd like to know.
Mm.
Yeah. If we should quit, I'd like to hear that.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
You'd like us to swear more? You could tell us that.
Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. We will catch you next time. See ya.
Bye-bye.